Hi, I'm Jeremy Corbyn, and welcome to the Peace and Justice podcast. This episode features a very exciting and interesting conversation with Derek Watson of the Well Society, the democratic group who are majority shareholders of Motherwell Football Club. Our conversation was recorded last November during the Peace and Justice Project's alternative COP26. We hope you enjoy it.
Things can and they will change. Thank you very much.
Football is part of our community. Absolutely. It's part of our lives. It's not totally rational, but, you know, we all love the game. Motherwell Football Club and Ravenscroft. Tell us the story.
I think it's in the name itself, you know, Motherwell Football Club, or the Steelmen. You know, that's the nickname, and it's named after the workers of the town. There's... Well, before my time, I'm early 30s, but, you know, I had uncles and family members that worked in the steelworks. And
so you were born at the time the steelworks died?
Yeah, I was born in 89, and, you know, that was the subsequent years was the years where people were going through struggle and fighting with Thatcher's government to try and get it to stay open, and unfortunately that didn't happen. And, I mean, the town's recovering now, but it's not fully recovered. You know, the scars are still visible. And I think, back to football, that the only thing that gives people a sense of pride in the town now is the football club. Don't get me wrong, we don't win the league, we don't win the cup every year, but it gives people, yeah,
fingers crossed.
Yeah. But it gives people a sense of belonging and a sense of purpose and a sense of togetherness. You know, before you had thousands of people, men and women, working in these steelworks, and it brings everyone together. There was a sense of pride. You know, they were one of the biggest producers of steel in the whole of Europe. Yeah. You know, now what have you got to be proud about? Motherwell, other than the team that play on a Saturday. You know, and unfortunately, there is no big employers other than the council. You could say the football club are probably, apart from the council, the biggest employer in the town. And that in itself speaks volumes.
Now, after Ravenscroft closed, there was obviously unemployment. There was also a mental health crisis. And sadly, there still is a mental health crisis. And I believe that mental health is actually a product of largely of poverty and insecurity, so personal stress, household stress, job stress. I know the club can't solve everything, but what do you try and do in that area?
Absolutely. I think the scars are still visible around the town. And you had a lot of primarily men, you know, of a certain age that had worked there all their days, and then they had nothing, you know. And I think very often now people talk about a just transition. There was nothing like that back then. You know, people were left on the scrap heap, and everyone's looking for jobs in a place where there's no jobs at all. And it wasn't just the knock-on effect. It was a knock-on effect. It wasn't just the steelworks that shut down. It was the cafe around the corner. It was the newsagents, you know, and it was everyone at once. You know, it was mass unemployment. And then, I mean, we're sitting in the pub just now, but what do you find if you've got nothing to do? People end up spending days in the pub. I think we've still got a mental health crisis here. I think a lot of that, being frank, is to do with drug and alcohol abuse, you know, the other things that you see in a community like gambling. People are just wanting hope, you know, they're wanting escapism, and they're not finding that because there's not enough well-paid jobs, you know, there's not enough job security, there's no trade unions for young people in many of the industries that they work in nowadays. You know, what we really need is a unionised workforce. We need good quality jobs, we need good paid jobs, and that's lacking, and it's been lacking since the Ravenscroft closed.
Is there a spin-off from the ownership and democracy of the club in the sense of people coming together for other campaigns and other things as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the reason that fan ownership works in a place like Motherwell is they've seen what happens when, you know, such a large community asset goes down the drain. You know, so people buy into the ownership of the football club because they want to protect a community asset, that community asset being the football club. I think what you see as well is people then have a say in what's going on. So rather than just turning up on a Saturday and you're there for an hour and a half and then going home, during the week, people are engaged with the football club. You know, they see the community initiatives that they're doing. There's channels where they can feed in to give their feedback and hopefully make a difference around the club. So, yeah, it empowers people as well. You know, it's not just 90 minutes on a Saturday. It's you're part of a wider community, a wider family.
And they're in the schools as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they're in the schools, yeah. So the community trust that Motherwell go out and deliver coaching programmes for the schools. We touched on before we were recording there, you know, they also do things where they're speaking to, so it's anyone from 3 years old up to, you know, end of life almost. You know, they also do programmes for people with Alzheimer's and dementia talking about football memories. So they get people in the room who, unfortunately, you know, might not remember what they've done that morning, but they could talk to you about who played for Motherwell in the 60s and who scored that 4-3 win against, you know, I don't know, Celtic or Rangers or whoever.
They remember that first match they went to.
Absolutely.
We all remember that.
Yeah, and it brings so much happiness and joy to people. You know, and that all happens at the stadium as well. So it's not just that 90 minutes on a Saturday. It's, you know, this place is open. That's come awesome. In and use it. You know, we're here for you rather than we're just taking the money from you like many other football clubs around the world.
Now, a lot of football fans go through a lot of pain with their clubs. It's not just on the field or off the field. It's about the club. I'm thinking Newcastle supporters, the most incredibly devoted supporters of any club anywhere, with huge expectations of their club. Absolutely. And they've been through hell and are still going through it now over this ownership. So the question of democratic ownership is, to me, very important.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a simple blueprint, I don't think there is, but what advice would you give to any group of fans that want to have some democratic control or ownership of their club?
I think it's very similar to, you know, a workplace. You need to be organised, you know, and there has to be collective organisation there. You use Newcastle United as an example. Their fans are fantastic. You know, they've been through hell with Mike Ashley. But once Mike Ashley's gone out, I would be expected as a Newcastle fan to have some sort of influence in there. Not a Saudi owner with, you know, horrendous human rights records. You know, and they're celebrating this like it's a win. It seems totally crazy. It shows how far they've dropped from actual collective bargaining. I think it's very important for fans of all clubs, and it's easy for me to say Motherwell playing in the Premier League and we're not competing in the Champions League. You know, we're not up against Barcelona, Real Madrid, Liverpool every week. So it's very easy for me to say, you know, what's more important is actually having a football club for the future. You know, we're not the ones that are challenging in those big competitions. Whereas Newcastle United, Liverpool, Arsenal, they want to be at the top of the game. But I think that's very short-sighted because it won't last forever. You know, so what I would say to people that are watching this and support football clubs all around the world is get organised. You know, have you got a supporters trust there that you can come together on? Start speaking to other fans and start thinking, you know, where is the direction of the football club going? Are we happy with where it's going? Are we happy with who's in the boardroom? Are we happy with, you know, what's going on away from the football park, not just the 90 minutes, as I keep hammering home on? But yeah, you know, that democracy in football clubs is massive. You know, the amount of people that go along to a football club on a Saturday, they shouldn't just be going along as paying customers. You know, they should really be making the narrative as to where the football club's going in the future.
It's about 500,000 people a week that watch football, isn't it?
It's
across the league, something like that, which is huge. And women's football has grown a great deal and continues to grow very fast. So you have women's team.
Yeah, we've got a women's team at Motherwell as well, My issue with a lot of the football clubs is they have women's football teams, but they don't give them, you know, the equal respect that they deserve. I think that these women's teams should be playing at the same stadium as the men. You know, and a lot of the time they're playing in public fields or they're playing at a training ground. It's not good enough. You know, if you really want to put that on an equal footing, you should start treating them with respect that they deserve.
Yeah, to watch WSL games on television.
The crowds are terrible, but they're always going to be low if you don't push them to the level that they deserve. You know, and I think it's for us, we were young boys coming through, and you always remember the first players that you went to see, they're your heroes. And these women that are playing for Motherwell or playing for Arsenal should be the heroes of the girls that are coming through, you know.
So how do practically fans go about it, what you're saying? Form a supporters trust?
Yeah, absolutely. If you've not got a supporters trust at your club, then seriously think about doing it. I think that, you know, there should be fans on boards all around the country. We're very lucky at Motherwell that our chief executive was previously a fan before he got into the boardroom. So his journey is very interesting. He ran a fan website. The club eventually brought him on to run the media at the club because we didn't have that before. And he's worked his way up and he's now in the boardroom. But what that means is that you've then got someone who's not just thinking about the bottom line. Yes, they have to pay the players. Yes, they have to keep the stadium running. But ultimately, every decision that's made is made with the fans at heart. If you can get to that position of power, you know, you've got a lot of influence over the direction of the football club. But I'd say first and foremost, yeah, you need to get organised and you have to start thinking about how can we have a collective here. I've seen it at some bigger football clubs across the country. And also, you look at Barcelona, they're a fan-owned club. It's a membership club. So please take that initiative, you know, to actually speak to fellow fans and say, how can we do this? Whether that's chucking £5 each into a bank account each month and trying to influence the board. But don't just turn up on a Saturday and watch the game and then go home and mm-hmm. and let other people dictate what's happening in your community. And the thing that for many people brings them the most joy in the weekend.
Yeah. It's something we all live. Do you think football supporters that have been through this experience, either the positive one of yourselves and taking ownership of the club, or the horrendous stress that Liverpool supporters went through over Hillsborough, do you think it changes the politics and attitudes within their communities as well?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I think that we're very lucky, very unlucky, to have came from a community like Ravenscraig, to have to go through that pain and hurt, but it makes you not want to see that ever happen again, and I think that's why fan ownership works. You know, I think if you look at Hillsborough for Liverpool, still a crying shame. You know, these people still not get justice. The death toll was rising now from, you know, 96 to 97. But that empowers people, you know, and I think Liverpool is probably the perfect example of where fan ownership would be very, very successful, because they have an organised community. You know, they have a traditional working class values, but they've also got a traditional working. Absolutely, I think the scars are still visible around the town. And you had a lot of primarily men, you know, of a certain age that had worked there all their days, and then they had nothing. You know, and I think very often now people talk about a just transition. There was nothing like that back then. You know, people were left on the scrap heap, and everyone's looking for jobs in a place where there's no jobs at all. And it wasn't just the knock-on effect. It was a knock-on effect. It wasn't just the steelworks that shut down. It was the cafe around the corner. It was the newsagents, you know, and it was everyone at once. You know, it was mass unemployment. And then, I mean, we're sitting in the pub just now, but what do you find if you've got nothing to do? People end up spending days in the pub. It's, I think we've still got a mental health crisis here. I think a lot of that, being frank, is to do with drug and alcohol abuse, you know, the other things that you see in a community like gambling. People are just wanting hope, you know, they're wanting escapism, and they're not finding that because there's not enough well-paid jobs, you know, there's not enough job security, there's no trade unions for young people in many of the industries that they work in nowadays. You know, what we really need is a unionised workforce. We need good quality jobs, we need good paid jobs, and that's lacking, and it's been lacking since the Ravenscraig closed.
Is there a spin-off from the ownership and democracy of the club in the sense of people coming together for other campaigns and other things as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the reason that fan ownership works in a place like Motherwell is they've seen what happens when, you know, such a large community asset goes down the drain. You know, so people buy into the ownership of the football club because they want to keep, they want to protect a community asset, that community asset being the football club. I think what you see as well is people then have a say in what's going on. So rather than just turning up on a Saturday and you're there for an hour and a half and then going home, during the week people are engaged with the football club. You know, they see the community initiatives that they're doing. There's channels where they can feed in to give their feedback and hopefully make a difference around the club. So yeah, it empowers people as well. You know, it's not just 90 minutes on a Saturday, it's you're part of a wider community, a wider family.
And they're in the schools as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they're in the schools, yeah. So they're the community trust that Motherwell go out and deliver coaching programmes for the schools. We touched on before we were recording there, you know, they also do things where they're speaking to, so it's anyone from 3 years old up to, you know, end of life almost. You know, they also do programmes for people with Alzheimer's and dementia talking about football memories. So they get people in a room who unfortunately, you know, might not remember what they've done that morning, but they could talk to you about who played for Motherwell in the 60s and who scored that 4-3 win against, you know, I don't know, Celtic or Rangers or whoever.
I never remember that first match they went to.
Absolutely.
We all remember that.
Yeah, and it brings so much happiness and joy to people. You know, and that all happens at the stadium as well. So it's not just that 90 minutes on a Saturday. It's, you know, this place is open. That's come awesome. In and use it. You know, we're here for you rather than we're just taking the money from you like many other global football clubs around the world.
And a lot of football fans go through a lot of pain with their clubs. It's not just on the field or off the field. It's about the club. I'm thinking Newcastle supporters, the most incredibly devoted supporters of any club anywhere, with huge expectations of their club. So, and they've been through hell and are still going through it now over this ownership. So the question of democratic ownership is, to me, very important.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a simple blueprint, I don't think there is, but what advice would you give to any group of fans that want to have some democratic control or ownership of their club?
I think it's very similar to, you know, a workplace. You need to be organised, you know, and there has to be collective organisation there. Using Newcastle United as an example, their fans are fantastic. You know, they've been through hell with Mike Ashley. But once Mike Ashley's gone out, I would be expected as a Newcastle fan to have some sort of influence in there. Not a Saudi owner with, you know, horrendous human rights records. You know, and they're celebrating this like it's a win. It seems totally crazy. It shows how far they've dropped from actual collective bargaining. I think it's very important for fans of all clubs, and it's easy for me to say Motherwell playing in the Premier League and we're not competing in the Champions League. You know, we're not up against Barcelona, Real Madrid, Liverpool every week. So it's very easy for me to say, you know, what's more important is actually having a football club for the future. You know, we're not the ones that are challenging in those big competitions. Whereas Newcastle United, Liverpool, Arsenal, they want to be at the top of the game. But I think that's very short-sighted because it won't last forever. You know, so what I would say to people that are watching this and support football clubs all around the world is get organised. You know, have you got a supporters trust there that you can come together on? Start speaking to other fans and start thinking, you know, where is the direction of football club going? Are we happy with where it's going? Are we happy with who's in the boardroom? Are we happy with, you know, what's going on away from the football park, not just 90 minutes, as I keep hammering home on? But yeah, you know, that democracy in football clubs is massive. You know, the amount of people that go along to a football club on a Saturday, they shouldn't just be going along as paying customers. You know, they should really be making the narrative as to where the football club's going in the future.
It's about 500,000 people a week that watch football, isn't it?
Across
the league, something like that, which is huge. And women's football has grown a great deal and continues to grow very fast. So you have women's team.
Yeah, we've got a women's team at Motherwell as well, My issue with a lot of the football clubs is they have women's football teams, but they don't give them, you know, the equal respect that they deserve. I think that these women's teams should be playing at the same stadium as the men. You know, and a lot of the time they're playing in public fields, so they're playing at a training ground. It's not good enough. You know, if you really want to put that on an equal footing, you should start treating them with respect that they deserve.
Yeah, because you watch WSL games on television.
The crowds are terrible, but they're always going to be low if you don't push them to the level that they deserve. You know, and I think it's for us, we were young boys coming through, and you always remember the first players that you went to see, they're your heroes. And these women that are playing for Motherwell or playing for Arsenal should be the heroes of the girls that are coming through, you know.
So how do practically fans go about it, what you're saying? Former supporters trust?
Yeah, absolutely. If you've not got a supporters trust at your club, then seriously think about doing it. I think that, you know, there should be fans on boards all around the country. We're very lucky at Motherwell that our chief executive was previously a fan before he got into the boardroom. So his journey is very interesting. He ran a fan website. The club eventually brought him on to run the media at the club because we didn't have that before. And he's worked his way up and he's now in the boardroom. But what that means is that you've then got someone who's not just thinking about the bottom line. Yes, they have to pay the players. Yes, they have to keep the stadium running. But ultimately, every decision that's made is made with the fans at heart. If you can get to that position of power, you know, you've got a lot of influence over the direction of the football club. But I'd say first and foremost, yeah, you need to get organised and you have to start thinking about how can we have a collective here. I've seen it at some bigger football clubs across the country. And also, you look at Barcelona, they're a fan-owned club. It's a membership club. So please take that initiative, you know, to actually speak to fellow fans and say, how can we do this? Whether that's chucking £5 each into a bank account each month and trying to influence the board. But don't just turn up on a Saturday and watch the game and then go home and let other people dictate what's happening in your community. And the thing that for many people brings them the most joy in the weekend.
It's something we all live. Do you think football supporters that have been through this experience, either the positive one of yourselves and taking ownership of the club, or the horrendous stress that Liverpool supporters went through over Hillsborough, do you think it changes the politics and attitudes within their communities as well?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I think that we're very lucky, very unlucky, sorry, to have came from a community like Ravenscraig, to have to go through that pain and hurt, but it makes you not want to see that ever happen again, and I think that's why fan ownership works. You know, I think if you look at Hillsborough for Liverpool, still a crying shame. You know, these people have still not got justice. The death toll is rising now from, you know, 96 to 97. But that empowers people, you know, and I think Liverpool is probably the perfect example of where fan ownership would be very, very successful, because they have an organised community. You know, they have a traditional working class values, but they've also got a traditional working class organised community there. You know, they're so used. You've seen the banners by yourself in the stadium, you know, and they get it. They totally get it. And I think it's very unfair that people say football and politics don't mix. Football and politics, in my opinion, go hand in hand, because every single decision that happens at that football club is a political decision. You know, so who would you rather make those decisions for you? Would you rather it was a foreign investor that has no interest in the local community, or would you rather it was the people that live in the houses surrounding that stadium?
There's some great literature written about sport. I mean, think C.L.R. James, Beyond a Boundary in cricket. Think Albert Camus and his writings about the joy and power of football. There's a lot there.
Absolutely, yeah, there's a lot to go on. I just think that football fans need to believe in themselves a bit more. And I think that stems from being treated like customers, you know, rather than actually realising the influence that they can have. But, I mean, where else do you get on a Saturday 50,000 people turning up with the same beliefs and values every week? Nowhere. Yeah, I think football fans need to realise the value that they have. You know, that the collective bargaining that they can have if they suddenly remove their voice. You know, if they're not in the football stadium, it's not then attractive to potential sponsors, it's not then attractive to the television companies that want to be all across the world. And that's when the people in the boardroom will start, you know, trembling.
Yeah.
They, what interest does having a football club if no one comes to see that football club?
Yeah. Which is why I was so opposed to the European Super League idea. Completely crazy idea.
Ridiculous.
A closed list of 12 clubs that are playing each other endlessly. No promotion, no relegation.
Yeah.
So what? How boring is that?
Don't get me wrong. There's obviously a place for football on a global stage. You know, of course I would love for people in Australia, America, Argentina, wherever to support Motherwell. But I think first and foremost, you need to remember the people that have founded that club, the people that have supported them when they were nothing, you know, and built them up to where they are just now. And you look at some of the teams that were applying for the European Super League, and you know, your Liverpools and Everton's, for example, if they would have been in that route, it's a total sellout to that community. You know, they've been through it all as it is. And then it takes away that, you know, you want that local derby, you know, we want that local rivalry as well. Oh, yeah. It's not what football's about. It's not a TV show.
There's nothing more intense than a rivalry of the nearest club, is there?
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, it should be.
Absolutely.
So what's your message to people watching us from the project and so on that want to do something about democracy?
Yeah, I think people need to get organised, as I said. You know, I think people need to realise the power that they have when they come together. And I think they need to realise, you know, how much a valued community asset a football club is. You know, it's not for someone from overseas or someone who's just got a lot of money to come in and use as their toy. You know, it really should be for the people, empowered by the people as well.
Thank you very, very much for all your time today.
Thank you.
And all the best to Motherwell.
You can come back for a game next time.
I'll come back. I promised to go to Kilmarnock as well, so I've got two matches to come to. Unless you play at Kilmarnock, of course.
Well, they're now relegated to the Championship, so...
It won't be a problem. Nash is in the Cup.
Yeah, that's true. Although they make them straight back up, they're doing quite well. Doing
probably
well.
Won't.
Yeah, totally. No, thank you, John.
Well done.
Cheers.
Yeah. It was great to speak to Derek last year and find out more about fan-owned football. I caught up with him at the conclusion of the Scottish season for an update, and what a season Motherwell have had.
Yeah, it's been a great season, Jez. It's been fantastic. I have to say that the first half was significantly better than the second. The second half we really struggled, but as you're probably aware, the Scottish Premiership splits into two sixes with five games to go. So we made the top six by the skin of our teeth. And then we managed to scrape it over the line. We finished fifth and got the last European slot. So we're off to the Europa League, which I was hoping for sun and beaches. But it looks like, as it stands, we're going to Wales or Ireland. So we'll just have to make do with that.
Oh, well done, you. I was following you on text in those last few games, just hoping against hope you got through it all, because you had a bit of a rough patch in the second half of the season, didn't you?
We did, yeah, but it's you know, it's a remarkable achievement. We've spoken length about fan ownership and you know, the restrictions, I suppose, that can place in football clubs when you don't have a billionaire or a millionaire bankroll in the football club. But this is the eighth time in 14 years that we've qualified for European competition. So I think it speaks volumes. I think it shows that the club are doing very, very well on and off the pitch, and long may it continue.
Well, you've got the community behind you, and you've got the community with you, and that must make a big difference. But the funny thing about football is, just when you think it's all going well, it doesn't. You know, as you know, I'm also an Arsenal supporter, and there we were, all ready to qualify for the Champions League, and then lose Southampton and Crystal Palace.
It must have been a hard one for you.
Well, yes, it was a bit. And it was just, you kind of realised that everything then depended on Spurs losing against Norwich. Well, it just never turned out like that, you know, but that's the way it goes. But the other team I really like, for lots of reasons, is Forest Green Rovers. And they did it. They won League Two.
Fantastic. You know, they're
now going up. The Wooden Stadium is being built. They're going up. They're a League One team now. Fantastic. They started out as a pub team, and they spent 120 years being a pub team, and now in League One.
I probably shouldn't admit this, but my grandmother was actually from Grimsby, so I was watching the conference playoff as well, and Grimsby got promoted back up into the Football League, so I was quite pleased with that as well. But I can't say I follow them religiously the way I do with Motherwell, you know.
That's your team, Motherwell. So it's great. So now you're going to be under pressure because you're in the Europa League. Now, I recognise that you obviously should get through the early rounds. And then after that, there's pressure. Is the club going to be able to withstand the financial battering you're getting all the time? Because you don't have the sugar daddies that Premier League clubs have elsewhere.
Yeah,
particularly English Premier League clubs.
Just to correct you, I wish we were in the Europa League, but we're actually in the Europa Conference League. We're not quite at the dizzy heights of the Europa League.
Well, yet, so you know,
one down from
let's just drop the idea of conference and call it Europa. You're in Europa, okay.
Exactly. No, I think we have to be realistic. You know, we probably spoke about this before. When you are a fan-owned football club, for me, success is being sustainable and making sure that the football club is in the hands of those that care about it the most and those that will make decisions with the football club and the community at the heart of everything they do. We hope to win the second qualifying round that we go in at. You know, we'd like to think that we would beat a team from the Irish League or the Welsh League. And then once we get through to the third qualifying stage, which I believe is the one before the playoff round, we could get some bigger teams from Germany, Spain, Belgium, etc. And, you know, at the end of the day, we know that we're not going to win this competition, and we see the fruits of playing against, you know, one of these potential former European giants as really bankrolling the club. You know, a big tie like that, if we got it on television, if we build Fir Park, it could bring significant funds into the football club, and that would sustain us for a good few months, potentially a year. You know, it's something that we're not used to. I say we're not used to it, you know, as I say, it was eighth time in 14 years, but we've not had big ties in Europe. You know, we've often get put out in the early rounds. So if we could get a so-called glamour tie, that would go a long, long way for a fan-owned club like Motherwell.
Who's your dream for a glamour side?
I don't know. I'd actually quite like to see us get a wee bit further and potentially get West Ham. You know, I think that would be great. Don't get me wrong. We'd love to jet set and go to Spain and Italy, but I think that old Battle of Britain aspect would be quite nice. I remember growing up and seeing some of the teams in the 90s when Scotland and England went head-to-head, one that stands out for me was Rangers and Leeds United, probably mid-90s. And I just always remember that, you know, but that was maybe when Scottish football was in its glory days. If we played West Ham, I'm under no illusions, we'd get absolutely smashed.
So what's the timetable then? You've got the Irish or Welsh club you've got to meet first. That'll be when? In early August time, will it?
It's actually on the 21st and 28th of July.
Right, very early then, yeah.
Very early,
and then
yeah.
If you get through that, what's after that then?
If we get through that, it's the 4th and the 11th of August. So that's the third qualifying round. Then it's the playoff round in group stages. So we've got a few games to win before we actually get into any sort of group stage. And, you know, it's going to be a tough ask, but we'll give it our best shot.
And what's the mood in the town now you've got through to this stage?
Well, that's exactly it. You know, a small, say, provincial football club like Motherwell, when we do qualify for Europe, especially after the difficult times we've had over the past few years, it gives everyone a lift. You know, it gives people something to look forward to. I'd like to think that, you know, the attendance will be almost a record high. You know, it will bring more money into local businesses from potentially fans from Ireland and Wales coming across. You'd like the whole hotels will be full, pubs will be full. It just gives the town that extra bounce. You know, it's a spring in the step, and everyone seems to be behind us. So I like to see it, and long may it continue, as I said.
I'm going to check the fixture list because I'm doing some stuff in Edinburgh and Glasgow in August. So if it fits in, I'll come.
I'll hold you to that.
It might not be the Emirates,
but you'll enjoy it.
Be fantastic. Yeah. So it's going well. And is it a model we can adopt elsewhere? Because it seems to me that football is, as ever, riven by money, complications, and the lack of democracy within it. And I think the government's task force on football, it's been an interesting exercise, but unless they grasp a nettle about fan participation and ownership, then it's going to continue just being very rich clubs being the plaything of very rich people, and the rest of football often struggling.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke about this before in an article I done for Tribune, an interview I done for Tribune, and I think football clubs need to ask themselves why people do it, you know, and they need to realise that ultimately the community and the fans are the lifeblood of the football club. As soon as you take that away and you make it a TV show, it disengages and makes the community that it actually belongs in disenfranchised. You know, you're pricing people out. It just loses a bit of its soul and identity. I think fan ownership is a model that football clubs across the world should be looking at. Germany's the perfect example. They've got the 50 plus one rule over there, where all clubs are at least 50% fan owned. And it shows you that big clubs can do it. You know, you've got Bayern Munich, you've got Barcelona, real successful European giants who are fan owned clubs. They operate on a different scale. You know, they've got much bigger budgets than we do. But ultimately, for me, it's about sustaining the football club and keeping it in the hands of the people that care about it the most. I think it's a real sad thing which's happening to English football. I know many people down south who are around about the same age as me or are a little bit younger and students, and they just can't afford to go to the places like the Emirates, or they can't afford to go and watch Manchester City, Manchester United, and that's not what it's about. You know, it's really, really sad, and I hope maybe in time football clubs will reevaluate, you know, what they really stand for.
In my constituency, there's huge loyalty to Arsenal as a football team, but most of the people that are showing great support for Arsenal can't afford to go there. The nearest they get is buying a shirt, which is terrible. Although Arsenal in the community is quite effective, and I'm pleased about that. But football is also a great inclusive thing. That we had, for example, an iftar supper at the Arsenal Stadium during Ramadan. It was really nice. Really nice in one of the reception places we had there. And then my son's involved in various local football things, as you know, and he's doing a tournament with some refugee teams during the summer break in July, August time, as a way of involving more and more people in football locally. Well, that's how it wants to be.
Exactly, and that's the way it should be. We've last season had an initiative where we asked football, because the fans were frozen out because of COVID, people didn't get to use their season tickets. So Motherwell, thankfully, and I think we were one of the only clubs in Scotland that done this, we said, next season, you don't have to pay for your season ticket. Listen, you didn't use it. Come back. Your season ticket is free for the next year. What we would like you to do, if you can afford it, is buy a season ticket or donate what you can for low-income families or unemployed families in the local area. You know, we raised over £70,000.
That's brilliant.
And our season tickets went up. You know, we didn't have a model where people had to come forward and say, I'm unemployed, I'm out of a job. We took away that stigma. You know, they didn't have to explain it. There was no criteria. Just come forward and get your free season ticket if you really have to do so. And we had a record number of season tickets that we've ever had. You know, don't get me wrong. It's not like Arsenal. We've only got 6,000 season ticket holders. But we want to make sure that it's accessible. And for me, that's vital, you know, especially in an area where historically there has been a high rate of unemployment.
Yeah,
and people aren't on the best wages in comparison to other places in the country. So, you know, it's very, very important that we've done that. We've actually continued it again this season, where low-income families and unemployed families can get a season ticket for Fir Park for free. And I think that's one of the benefits of being a fan-owned club. You know, we're not looking at the bottom line all the time. We're looking at what can we do that benefits the community and the people that live there.
Fan-owned club is the community. The community is the club. Fantastic. Listen, we need a football manifesto headed by Motherwell.
Let's do it. Yeah,
let's do it. Okay, Derek, that's fantastic. So
no worries.
I'll see you soon.
Really nice.
See some football.